It is time for today's AM Minnesota program. Last week, I was at the National Association of Farm Broadcasters Convention. Part of the convention is Thursday morning into early afternoon. It's this huge trade show in a ballroom set up with all different agribusinesses, commodity organizations, farm groups where farm broadcasters can go and do interviews. So I thought, well, why not put a couple of those on today's AM Minnesota program? So the first one, I stopped by and had a chance to visit with Drew Lerner with World Weather about the upcoming winter, the growing season here, not only in the U.S., but also in South America.
Drew, first tell us about yourself and how you developed your passion for weather. Obviously, you have a passion for it if you're going to look at all these graphs and worldwide weather all day long.
Yeah, you know what? I was born with this in my blood. I don't know what the problem is. You know, when I was 5 years old, I used to sit in front of we had a big picture window in our living room, you know, opened up so we can see out the window. And I would just sit there and watch lightning and just was fascinated by all of the mechanics of it all. And it really started then. And I was blessed. When I got into late grade school, I had some awesome teachers that helped promote that. I even ran into a physics teacher that really pushed me hard, and he's one that got me where I'm at. So, I mean, it's in my blood, so I just needed someone to point me in the right way, you know.
In addition to being a farm broadcaster, I'm still a farmer, and when I watch the weather, I'm just always awestruck at the power of Mother Nature and the weather.
Oh, isn't that amazing? You know, anybody who thinks there's no God, they can't possibly come to that conclusion when you watch the weather. The intensity, the power, the mechanics of these storms is absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, we can wipe out so much property in a flash. We have nothing to say about anything when it comes to weather. But it is amazing what it can do. It can be such a blessing, and it can be such a terrible thing. And we've seen both, haven't we?
Yeah, that is for sure. In fact, up until a few years ago, I'd never heard derecho.
Yes. And you know what? We seem to find new names for everything. You know, I think today we talked a little bit about the atmospheric river. You know, when I was younger, it wasn't called atmospheric wind. It was called a Pineapple Express is what it was, because it brought all this moisture in from the Hawaiian area. Well, but you're right. Yeah, no one had ever heard of derecho. But you know what? It's not like a brand new product. It's been out there from the very beginning. We just got fancy and decided to name it. But, you know, the line of storms that are in a part of that development of the derecho, you know, can make such a terrible mess out of agriculture as well as personal property. And we saw that over the last few years. And those events have been around. We just haven't had the data to be able to back them up.
Yeah. Well, you talked a lot about the cycles. And being an old-timer, they watch the cycles because weather has a tendency of repeating, goes into active cycles where you get more severe storms or more hurricanes, and it's related to sunspots. And these are some things that we've known for a long time, aren't they, Drew?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a total believer about the cyclicalness of weather, and I can prove it, and I get into some interesting arguments with folks. You know, we have warmed up our atmosphere. Okay, there is climate change.
But if you're from Minnesota, you aren't so upset about warmer.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, we've seen some really good benefit. I mean, look at our yields out there in the fields. You know, let's just assume for a minute that the climate change is because of the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Well, these plants are eating it up, right? So the warmer bias is helping to support them. We don't see the freezes we used to have, and we've got more carbon dioxide to feed the plants. And, you know, it's a great thing, and the crops are really responding well.
Yeah. Took great interest in your longer-range forecast for the upcoming growing season. Part of me as a farmer raising corn and soybeans, well, I want higher prices, but what happens to my corn and soybeans? I sell it to my pork-producing friends that turn it into pork. So it's kind of like we're looking at things from a different perspective. But the long and short of what you were talking about for our spring-summer weather, Didn't see a whole lot of hope for stimulating higher corn and soybean prices, Drew.
That's right, and that's the sad part of my message today. We are in a pattern right now that is going to be a little unfriendly to our marketplace, and the problems that we have with prices is probably not going to go away. But I'll tell you what, I mentioned today and talking about the solar cycle, and you can do a correlation with the solar cycle and market prices. And what you'll find is that when you're in that 22-year solar cycle, which is what we've been in the last 5 years.
And just left it now, didn't we?
We left it last year, a year ago, and our weather's gotten better, right? But what we found is that the market prices, market futures prices, have tended to be very strong during that 22-year solar cycle. Once you get to the solar minimum, from there to the solar maximum, there's usually about 5 years there, and there's a tendency for the market to be overheated with strong prices because there's so much adversity in the weather associated with that weather cycle. Once you get to the solar maximum, which we did a year ago, you start seeing the weather improve. And then when you go into another year after that, it gets a whole lot better, and we end up with what we've got now. You know, there's no problems out there. It's a cycle. It will repeat again. We have to wait another year for us to get into a mode where we're going to have more trouble in the world again. I'm guessing that we're probably 6 months away from anything really big that would, you know, make any big difference in the marketplace. I'm not saying that we're going to be a whole lot higher a year ago, but at least we'll be a little less ho-hum than we are now.
And you had interesting predictions on Brazil and Argentina. And, well, the key point I learned, Drew, is I go to NOAA website and I'm tracking the moisture, and make your point about that can be a little bit misleading when you see all that red there.
That's right. You know, that's one of my pet peeves, I guess. You know, it's a percent of normal chart that a lot of folks will look at when it comes to Brazil, because they're trying to figure out, is the rain above or below normal? But what you have to remember is that Brazil is a very wet place. In fact, they get more rain than what they need in order to support their corn and soybean crops. And if you stop and think about it, the years that their rainfall is below normal are the years that they do best, because the crop has an opportunity to develop like we see here in the States, where the roots will go through a period of, the plant will go through a period of drier, biased conditions, and the roots will develop deeper into the ground, giving it a whole lot of strength and energy to run on next time it rains. And that's what, it's just really important that when you look at Brazil, that you don't get caught up on their percent of normal chart, but you look at their soil moisture and the timeliness of rain, because that's really what it's all about.
And back to our upcoming growing season, summer, maybe a tendency of a little bit drier in the southwest or southeast again. And, well, that's kind of normal. They tend to get kind of dry down there every year, don't they, Drew?
Yeah, you know, they do a lot. And, you know, one of the things that I look at is that a La Nina event like we have right now, a weak one, it will dry out the southeast. And that usually sets the stage for a little bit of a prolonged period of drier biased weather. Even if La Nina goes away, it kind of just sets the atmosphere in the wrong direction. And I think that's what we're going to see over in 2026. We're probably going to have the Delta and parts of the southeastern United States with a drier tendency. But the rest of the country will probably do fairly well, I would think.
And it's kind of sad that in production agriculture, a little bit cannibalistic. To have really good prices, we need somebody else to not do so well. But doesn't look like South American weather, from your outlook, is going to give us any hope the prices are going to dramatically increase for corn and soybeans from South American production problems. Not perfect, but not bad.
Yeah, you know, I think we need some kind of a shakeup to take place. I don't want to wish disaster on people, but the weather doesn't look adverse enough right now in South America to make a difference. And there's not enough other places that are in the midst of their growing season right now to make any difference whatsoever. So it is all about South America. When we look at the rest of the world for 2026, I don't see any problems either for the first half of the year. Now, later in 2026 and going into 27, we're probably going to see the return of El Nino, and that will probably set the stage for a little bit more market attention. But unfortunately, that's several months away, if not, you know, 9 months. So it's going to be a while.
One more point, Drew. I used to know a climatologist, University of Minnesota Extension. Dr. Mark Seeley was his name. He had the same passion for weather, and he's just like you. He could remember all those significant weather events going back for decades.
Yeah, you know, we're kind of a motley crew, I guess. You know, a good meteorologist, though, would have that passion. If you get to, you know, wandering around, I know you do a lot of interviews with a lot of folks. The ones that have that passion that burns are usually the best forecasters. And I look for that when I hire people, actually, because that passion is so important. If it's just a job, you're not going to be able to do, you know, you've got to love it and you've got to want to understand it and you want to conquer it. And that's kind of where I'm at.
We're farmers, writers. Why can we always remember the really bad weather events? I can remember the drought of 1988. I can remember the Halloween blizzard of 1991. The 1993 year of no summer, 40 bushel corn, 40% moisture, and 40-pound test weight. I can remember the prevented plant year of 2013. 2024, I remember the massive flooding in southern Minnesota. So this year, I'm trying to change it. This late date in my life, Drew, we had the most beautiful fall for harvest last year. So maybe I can remember one good thing related to the weather.
Good for you. Definitely want to do that. Absolutely. Those are rare. You know, we talk about normal. We don't even know what normal is anymore. But those years like this one, this has been just an awesome year. Even though there's been some dryness around finishing out this season, I don't think there's too many that would really label this as a really bad problem. You know, I think everyone was happy about the harvest, and we didn't hurt yields much. It doesn't look like we have pretty big crops out there. So next year when we turn the spigot on and we get a little more moisture, I wonder if that's going to turn this a little bit different.
Well, Drew, thank you for everything you do, helping production agriculture and your passion for the weather.
Well, I appreciate your time as well, and I wish everyone a super good winter and a
Good morning. It's time for an update here on the Linder Farm Network on this Tuesday morning. Chicago corn and beans fairly quiet once again today. Joining us, Jim Emter, Van Onen Company, Alexandria. Jim, what's happening today with these markets?
Well, Linda, as we set the tone for this week here, here's kind of the trading schedule. Wednesday will be a normal trading day. Thursday, markets will be closed. Friday, we'll have a hard open in the morning, so no overnight trade Thursday into Friday. Friday, we have that hard open. And then the market's grains will close at around 12:05. So again, that's kind of the course we've got coming at here with the Thanksgiving holiday. Export sales, we got export sales from October 9th. So it'll take us until January 23rd to get caught up on all exports. It'll take us until January 8th to get caught up on the CFTC commitment of traders reports. But at least for the export sales this morning, corn coming in at 1.326 million metric tons. That was within the range of expectations. Soybeans coming in at 785,000 metric tons, again, in the range of expectations, and wheat at 613, just above the top end of expectations. So market got that. This is just kind of a back-and-forth chop trade, Linda, here for the holiday. You know, market doesn't have a lot of direction one way or the other. I think we're longing to get caught up in a lot of these areas. Technically speaking, we're still in a bit of a liquidation phase here, so we can cleanse through Thanksgiving. Then generally speaking, we start to see some bids pick up here in December. So if we can see China come to the table here for beans, maybe even a surprise corn sale as we work ahead, continue to buy some wheat. I think those are things that if we can keep demand strong, we will find our way back out of here, I think, with the spreads narrow, generally speaking. And again, with some of the cash undertones, if we can keep grain movement happening, that should be the catalyst that can get us back up. But at least for now, we're just saying, hey, work those crazy stretch orders both to the downside and to the top side and see if this market gives us anything through this holiday time frame.
Livestock, a wild day, yes, sharply lower day yesterday and a little higher today. What's going on?
Yeah, yesterday when we locked limit, Linda, we can't get much lower than that. So, you know, the expectations were, well, how much deeper can we get? And we immediately out of the gate drop about another $2 to $3 in live cattle. You know, we saw feeder cattle down roughly, you know, another $4 or $5 there. And then all of a sudden we find our way out of it. Feeder cattle now trading higher on the day, but anticipate a lot of back and forth. I think people are going to let the dust settle here a little bit after yesterday's trade, Linda. And how we go home today is far more important than where we're trading here.
Jim Emter, Van Dawn and Company, Alexandria, and Chicago December corn at 424 and a quarter up a half, March at 438 and a quarter up 1.5, and July up 2.25. Soybeans near unchanged, January 1123 and a quarter steady, March 1132 and a half up a half, and July down a quarter of a cent. December soybean meal up 370, December soybean oil down 44, December Chicago wheat up 2.75, live cattle December 207.40 up 20, February down 10, January feeder cattle up 107, December lean hogs up 5, February down 10. This is the Linder Farm Network.
Hi, I'm Dan Lemke from the Linder Farm Network, and I'm inviting you on a holiday vacations tour. Explore the majestic fjords of Norway, August 7th to the 15th. Discover Norway's unique culture and dramatic landscapes, including a guided tour of Oslo, two ferry rides through stunning fjords, and panoramic views atop Mount Floyen. Visit holidayvacations.com, keyword Linder, to request a brochure, watch a travel show, and to book this tour.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Gopher State One Call reminds you no place is that more important than when you're doing excavation on the farm. From tilling, grading land, digging a foundation, putting in a fence, or other tasks, you need to call 811 48 hours before you dig. Save yourself from potential liability by calling 811 or going to gopherstateonecall.org. 48 hours before you dig. That's our update on the Linder Farm Network.
Drew Lerner with World Weather. And I also had a chance to stop by the National Farm Medicine Center and talk to Gerald or Jerry Miner, who is a fire chief in Wisconsin.
Gerald or Jerry Miner is here at the Farm Broadcasters Convention with the National Farm Medicine Center. So, Gerald, first we were talking before we went off the air. You live in Wisconsin. You're a Packer fan. So we're just going to move on from there and agree to disagree.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. I've done that before. Half my relation live in Illinois, so I have to put up with that,
yeah,
too.
So you've had some practice. Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about the National Farm Medicine Center.
Well, our fire departments in central Wisconsin have been involved with the Farm Center since they opened the doors in 1981. It's a partnership that's been formed because of a need that existed back in 81. We were asked how much farm rescue training is being taught to new recruits. And the answer was none, absolutely none. So back then, a program was developed with another group that I worked with in Wisconsin called Specialist Code 3. And we put together 20 years worth of farm accident, and we don't call them accidents anymore either, rescue training. How to teach firefighters how to do confined space rescue, how to take apart a corn picker, how to deal with grain bin issues. And we taught, and in the Farm Center alongside Marshfield Clinic at that time, was alongside us and supported us the entire way. We took a break from that in after 1990, I believe, and we brought it back again because we got a fresh...
Unfortunately, there's probably a need for it again.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because a lot of the firefighters we taught were retiring. And we had a whole new batch of firefighters out there, and we brought the program back for 5 years. We got some funding to run it, and we enhanced the program, and we have done a lot of other things with the Farm Center. We helped develop the Farm Mapper program, where fire departments go out and they take an aerial shot of your farm, and they identify all the hazards that we can run into at 3 a.m. I need to know where the power shutoffs are. Where do you keep your pesticides, your chemicals, where your high-dollar equipment is stored, so that we know that going into that farm.
On the way out there, you can be briefing up on what you're going to...
It's our pre-plan. We never pre-planned farms before, and that was something that came, again, out of a question, out of a need. They said, what's one of the biggest problems you have when you go to a farm? And I said, we don't know where anything is. So, from that, a newer program called RF-DASH stands for Rural Firefighters Delivering Ag Safety and Health. This is a five-part program. It's absolutely free for anybody who wants to take it. And it does farm mapping. It identifies hazards on the farm. It gets the farm and the fire department together on the same page. We don't have in Wisconsin, we don't have the regulatory authority to inspect farms. We can ask, but we don't have any requirements for the fire departments to interact. However, it is extremely important for rural fire service, which is 83% of the fire departments in Wisconsin, to interact with their farms.
And I expect Minnesota would probably be fairly similar.
I would doubt if it's any different. The interaction, we needed to look at the farm just like we looked at a paper mill. Okay, it's another industry. They both have confined spaces. They both have places where people can come entrapped. They both have chemicals. So the similarities were really not that much. They're all places where I can injure firefighters. So the next step was not only training the firefighters, but let's see if we can get the farms safer. So we meet with our local farms, and can we help you make your farm safer by letting us can we take a look at your equipment? Do you have all of your, do you have rollover protection on all your equipment? Do you have shields in place? So this marriage, if you will, is a way for rural fire departments to get together with those farms. The reason is we don't want to injure any firefighters and we don't want to lose any farmers. When you lose a firefighter on a small town department or you lose a farmer in that same community, you stand a tremendous amount of chance that in 2 to 3 years, that farm's going to be gone. And that firefighter that died, that chief is probably going to be gone. Not because they got terminated so much as dealing with that fire department death. Absolutely. So the similarities are amazing. It's a ripple effect when that happens in a community. We don't need that. The loss in dollars can be over $1 million to that community to lose that farm operation. So this partnership has developed, and now we've gone national with the program. So the RF-DASH program you can get online for free to take to your fire department to help you get together with your farms. It's very simple to find. You go to either the Farm Center website and type in the search RF-DASH. It'll take you to all the materials. It takes you to an online course. We can come out and teach the course, but you too can do it all online. So all of these things have been developed over the last 40 years. And it's just because of the partnerships that we've had, Central Wisconsin at least, with the Farm Center. They're my neighbors.
I had another thought too, is that Dusty Deans, our Faribault Fire Chief, Emerging Management Director, he's in the studio quite often.
Yep.
You know, and he commented to us, it's been a major change over the last 15 or 20 years. They would much rather be out talking to the kids, teaching the kids about fire safety. They'd rather be going out and inspecting in home and prevent a fire rather than respond to a fire.
Absolutely.
And I had another thought. You mentioned you don't have the authority to be able to go in and inspect a farm. Okay, well, how about the carrot and the stick approach? How about I can have my local fire chief out, and they can inspect the farm, and we can correct anything that might be dangerous. And then, gee, my insurance company thinks that's a good idea because now I'm less likely to have a fire. Maybe I get a break on my insurance premium.
It's a possibility, but one of the things we want to assure the farmers are is we don't report to insurance companies. If you can sell this idea to your insurance company, good for you, and we'd like to hear about it. But we don't report to any other agency.
Other than the farmer to say, here's something, and let's see if we can prevent a tragedy or a big fire.
And fire prevention is along the same line. If you have to use a fire extinguisher, that means prevention didn't work somewhere.
Yeah.
So on the farm, if I can help you prevent a fire in your combine by you cleaning it off every day with a leaf blower and greasing all of the rub points where fires happen in those machines, I'll save you $1 million. And I don't have to drive to the middle of your field to help put out your combine that is now ablaze. So the prevention part of this works just like fire prevention does.
As you spread the word on this program,
I'll bet you get a lot of people say, this is a good idea. Because just this last summer again, we had another grain bin entrapment and another farmer died.
Yeah, and we see that all across the United States. Colorado had four people die in a confined space event this summer. People think that safety is expensive, but I'll give you a comparison. If I get you to put a ROPS on your tractor that doesn't have one, and you roll it over and you walk away from it, what's that worth? If that ROPS costs you $5,000, it's worth everything. If you roll that tractor over without the ROPS and you get killed or seriously injured, you or any member of your farm family or employees, what's that going to cost? $5,000 won't touch it. So safety is not that expensive. It is a much better approach. I'm not worried about putting my firefighters out of business because I'm not going to fires on farms anymore. There's plenty of things that we do. But I would rather go to that farm just like your fire chief told you. Let's prevent this from happening. And then let's bring our fire department out. Let's look things over. How are you doing? That type of partnership is truly advantageous for both agencies.
And so how you can get more information then on this website again, Jerry, and all this information is there, teaching materials free of charge.
Yeah, the National Farm Medicine Center is based out of Marshfield, Wisconsin, Marshfield Clinic Research Foundation in conjunction with Sanford Health. And you can Google it. That's truly the easiest way to find anything today. Yeah. And once you get into the site, all of the materials you need are there. There's an 800 number if you can't find something, and they will guide you in any direction you want to go.
Well, thanks for your time, Gerald, and your passion for helping people.
You're very welcome. Glad that you stopped by the booth.
It was kind of fun visiting with Gerald afterwards, and I was maybe bragging just a little bit about our fire chief, Dusty Deans, but Dusty was an electrician. And how valuable is that when you go to a fire, that someone that knows something about the wiring and where to shut off the power and all those things. And the other advantage that we have here is some of those part-time firefighters that are also farmers. Pretty sure that's true in the Faribault Fire Department, but almost every volunteer fire department in our listening area, that they have farmers that have some experience in power takeoffs and augers and bends and livestock buildings. They have that practical experience to help someone when there's been an accident. But it's really fascinating to talk to Jerry about this national program. And definitely going to pass that information along to Dusty, and maybe he can spread the word. Lots of information out there to help train firefighters in how to prevent tragedies and prevent fires. Well, our temperature in downtown Faribault, we are still at 46 degrees, still kind of cloudy, but certainly not as bad as it was when I came into the studio this morning. Even though technically we are in a dense fog advisory until 11 o'clock this morning, and then that winter storm warning kicks off this evening and goes through tomorrow morning. So if you're traveling early for Thanksgiving, just leave early, allow plenty of time, and maybe skip driving, hopefully this evening into tomorrow morning. Here's national news.